I can't begin to describe how satisfying it is for a researcher to see their life's work actually making a difference.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO of the National Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming injury through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories you are not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. We also tell stories of experts who have worked to help spinal champions achieve that better quality of life. Today, we are delighted to be talking with Dr. Belinda Beck. Dr. Beck is a professor in the School of Allied Health Sciences at Griffith University Gold Coast campus, where she has taught musculoskeletal anatomy and conducted bone research for the past 30 years. Dr. Beck graduated from the University of Queensland with a degree in Human Movement Studies Education and from the University of Oregon with a Master of Science in Sports Medicine and a PhD in Exercise Physiology. Finally, Dr. Beck is director and founder of The Bone Clinic, a translational research clinic that implements evidence-based exercise intervention into clinical practice for osteoporosis. This will be a primary focus of our discussion today. What an honor to be speaking with a woman with such expertise. Dr. Beck brings to the table stories of women she's worked with in the Bone Clinic who have found hope in their journey with osteoporosis. Now that you know what to expect, let's get back to it and dive right into Dr. Belinda Beck's expert story. We'll call this patient Olivia. Olivia was diagnosed with osteopenia in the spine and osteoporosis in the hip at the age of 49 in 2014.
Olivia initially visited a physiotherapist who suggested a number of exercises she could do, but it wasn't very motivating for her. For the next 2 years, she engaged a personal trainer once a week to motivate her to keep doing her exercise, but the thought of going to the gym was of no interest.
Then in 2016, Olivia saw a TV segment on one of the Bone Clinic's programs and liked both the science behind it and the structure of the program. This program aimed to improve bone health through weightlifting techniques. Learning how to lift weights would be a totally new experience, but all the techniques were demonstrated, and staff would closely monitor lifting sessions.
For Olivia, it felt great to be getting stronger and to know she could make a difference in her bone health no matter what her age was. She even convinced a 77-year-old mum to join her.
Attending the Bone Clinic felt particularly comfortable for Olivia, because everyone was in the same boat, which was a great equalizer. The atmosphere was friendly, as everyone could relate to one another. Staff running the sessions would make the effort to learn everyone's names, which in turn helped participants get to know each other. The value of community was found at this clinic.
Not only did Olivia discover community during her osteoporosis journey, but at her 12-month review, she discovered she'd improved her lumbar spine BMD by 7.3%, which is pretty impressive.
Dr. Beck, can you tell us what BMD stands for?
Yeah, BMD stands for bone mineral density, and it's measured by DEXA, or dual energy X-ray absorptiometer. So if a doctor suspects you have osteoporosis, they'll normally send you for a bone density scan. And what is measured is BMD. So it's a low dose X-ray, and it is an estimate of your bone mass, how much bone you have. It's just a really easy and safe way to do it.
Is it often difficult for patients to increase their BMD by 7%?
I have to say, it's taken me a while to get used to the kind of results that we're getting from the clinic, because it's extremely unusual for exercise to be this effective. For years, you only have to look at the research and the meta-analyses of the research to see that exercise was always considered to be a very modest influencer of bone mass. It helps to prevent loss, that is a known, but it's rare that it makes bone grow a considerable amount in old age. So that's why growing bone this amount is pretty impressive, and we see it quite consistently.
That is absolutely incredible. The second patient we will call Charlotte. Charlotte was diagnosed with osteoporosis after an MRI of her toe revealed a stress fracture. She was given medication for osteoporosis, but felt even worse.
Yeah, oftentimes people don't respond well to medications, and so they look for alternatives. So like Olivia, Charlotte joined the Bone Clinic, and she tells us every aspect of her experience was exemplary. She was given extensive advice on multiple occasions on how to adapt her diet to living with osteoporosis. So that obviously means thinking about things like calcium and vitamin D.
The exercise physiologists at the Bone Clinic took a tailored approach for her and all of the other clients' movement regimes. Charlotte recalls looking forward to her lifting classes because she knew that her physiologist would not settle for anything less than the correct form. She received plentiful advice on how she could improve. This was encouraging and motivating for her.
So Charlotte continues to work on her form and her technique. It's something we're very, very careful with because we want to prevent injury. She loves coming to the clinic, and she's really enjoying the fact that her quality of life has improved.
Thanks to a tailored, exercise-based, and non-surgical approach, Olivia and Charlotte were able to improve their qualities of life. While they are each still working to improve their bone health through training, they know they have found a sustainable treatment that works. Dr. Beck, it was awesome to hear how these two women's lives have been so positively impacted by training at the Bone Clinic. How does it feel to be a part of this personal progress for them? Can you tell us a little bit about what a day in your life looks like at the clinic and as the clinic director? And also tell us a little bit about the different roles that you play there. And I can imagine as the clinic founder, to see these improvements in patients must be very gratifying. What can you tell us about the overall history of the clinic and maybe some of the reasons why you decided to start the clinic?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. And as quite often happens in science, there was a little bit of luck involved. I am still a 100% professor at Griffith University. I spend the vast majority of my time physically at the university teaching and doing lab-based research. And I was approached by a person who had been doing some training with women in her gym. She wasn't an exercise scientist, but she had been doing this kind of training herself to rehab from an injury. And she loved it so much that she quit her other job and started training other women. And those women started coming to her after a year or so saying, I just got my bone density scanned back and I've improved my bone mass. So she contacted me and said, I've been reading a little bit about exercise for bone and I'm getting better results than all you scientists. So I looked at what she was doing and was horrified to begin with because it seemed so dangerous.
I bet.
It was very heavy and at a high intensity and generally what we would typically avoid for people with low bone mass because they're quite frail, sometimes, not always. So I said, if you can show me evidence, we'll have a look at this. So she did, and we did. We ran the LiftMore project, which was a 8-month intervention, exercise intervention. It was a randomized controlled trial of people with low and very low bone mass. And we showed very convincingly that this exercise program does actually build bone in people. This is postmenopausal women with low to very low bone mass. And it did it without causing injuries, but it was fully supervised. The emphasis was on technique and gradual introduction and with a sort of a group community kind of feel to it. The results were so great that it motivated me to want to start the clinic because I know there are so many people who are suffering. And once we did start the clinic, we started the men's trial. So we've just completed the LiftMore for men. We found exactly the same effect in men, just as effective. So the answer to your question, how does it feel to be a part of this personal progress for them, is I can't begin to describe how satisfying it is for a researcher to see their life's work actually making a difference in people's day-to-day life. And it's not all about the bone, because people on a day-to-day basis don't see their bone. It's an invisible disease. But what they do see is their function and their ability, not being able to sit down without holding onto something to lower themselves into a chair or onto the toilet or into the car. They know how they feel. They look in the mirror and they see they're standing up straighter. So their kyphosis or the curvature of their spine starts to straighten out, which is another thing we measured in the LiftMore trial, and we're certainly seeing it at the clinic as well. So many of our women say, you know, quite aside from bones, I'd still be coming here because I feel so great. I can go hiking with my husband again and all sorts of benefits that we wouldn't have immediately expected. So yeah, pretty impressive.
That's incredible. I'm imagining what it looks like in the clinic. Can you paint a picture for us of what kinds of equipment you have there. And I'm imagining the community aspect of what you've built there in the clinic is also so important to the patients who come, that they get inspiration and hope from each other and probably encourage each other to continue with exercise. Do you use kettlebells or dumbbells or weight stations, or what does it look like?
Well, the one thing you won't see is a very glitzy, shiny, mirror-covered gym set up with tons and tons of weight machines and doof-doof music and spandex and, you know, the usual very daunting gym sort of environment for a lot of older people. Although you would be surprised how much spandex we do see these days.
Hey, it's comfortable.
It is really comfortable. I'm wearing some right now. It's fantastic. Yeah,
this is not the spandex of the 80s.
Yeah, that's right. It's somewhat of a competition these days who can have the most leery leotard. But so we use mainly barbells, so weights on bars, and we want this gym to be as accessible to as many as possible, so we keep our prices as low as possible. And so again, it's not flash, it's not fancy, but it's somewhere that is just all about the science and the evidence-based practice. We do have a lot of consult rooms because it's not just a gym. It's an extension of my research program. So whereas I, you know, at the university, I have a lab where I do very tightly controlled, randomized controlled trials. At the bone clinic, every person who walks in the door is a research participant, and they sign, yes, I'm willing to contribute my data to this project. And so they have a 2.5-hour assessment when we first see them. We do their bone density scans. We do a full assessment like we would have in the Lifmore trial, testing all their function and various things, you know, tandem walk tests and back extensor strength and timed up and go, all those standard tests. Then we send them to the dietitian and they have a 45-minute consult with her about their diet and obviously trying to tease out whether they're getting the recommended daily allowance of calcium and vitamin D. And then we tell them about our program and suggest that they come twice a week to do that. And then they come on a user pay basis. And then at the end of 12 months, we test them again. And so all of that data is compiled, and I have begun to report that at conferences. I haven't written any papers up yet because I'm waiting for even more data, but we're at the point where we've got about 400 people in the most recent report, all showing exactly the same thing that we showed in the Lifmore trial. And the great thing is we're also tracking compliance. So everyone who comes in, we follow how much weight they're lifting and how often they're coming a week, because we're interested to know, if you come once a week, do you get the same effect? If you come three times a week, do you get a better effect? We recommend twice a week because that's what the Lifmore study tested, but we don't know whether more or less is more or less effective. And also in this demographic, we have lots of people, we call them gray nomads. I don't know if you do in the US, in their RV, and they go touring for long periods of time. And so many of our clients will disappear for 3 months of the year and they've just been driving around Australia, and then they'll come back and they'll start again. So we want to know the effect of, you know, stopping training for 3 months. So everything about this clinic is based in research, and it's, you know, the minute we observed that it wasn't working, that would be the day we closed our doors. But, you know, that's obviously never happened. And as I say, the ancillary benefits are so incredible that even if we weren't building bone, I know there'd be people who would want to come.
Yeah. At the Spine Health Foundation, we talk a lot about movement as it relates to spine health and preventative health options for the spine, just that idea of moving and safe movement. I'm imagining that the bone clinic is the gym experience for the folks who come. It is their version of going to the gym, but they have this closely supervised way of doing their exercises so that they don't hurt themselves while they're doing that. That has got to be just such a gift. I want to say patients, but clients, yeah, to come.
I often describe bone as the princess tissue, because it's exercise, we know, is medicine for every part of the body. And you could do just about any kind of exercise and it would be good for your heart and your metabolism and your cognition. But it's not the case with bone. We know that just going for a walk or cycling and swimming, it's not going to improve your bone mass.
This gets to really the heart of the matter here.
So the lower intensity exercise, just the aerobic type stuff that we've always been told by our doctor is good. How many times would your doctor have said to you, you need to walk more? That's their first recommendation for most health conditions. And I would agree, it's an excellent exercise. It's highly accessible for just about everybody. But the trouble is, it doesn't grow bone. And for some people who are quite frail, in actual fact, it increases their risk of falling. So walking is not a panacea, and it's certainly not what I would recommend for osteoporosis. Cycling and swimming, both fantastic exercise. And I'm not suggesting that people shouldn't do them. I'm just saying if you want to effect a change in your bones, then this is the starting place of your exercise regime. You do your high intensity lifting for your bones, and then maybe on the other 5 days of the week, pick an aerobic exercise to do something different. But you've got to start with this very targeted exercise for your bones, or you're not going to grow them.
And I think what's so fascinating about what we're talking about in terms of growing bones is I think oftentimes people think that bone is a static tissue, that it's not living and breathing and changing and expanding and shrinking. And in fact, it is. And so we think about, well, we're going to do exercises to get bigger biceps, or we're going to do exercises to improve our heart muscle, or we're going to do certain exercises to improve flexibility. This idea of, and these are my exercises for my bones, I think is very novel and something we really need to do a big job in terms of educating people that bone is a living and breathing tissue and it has its own needs, both nutritionally and as well as the type of exercise it requires to stay healthy.
And if you look at most medical degree curriculum, you will find the amount of time devoted to exercise prescription would fit on a pinhead. And this is not disrespect. There's so much for doctors to learn these days. Pharmacology is, you know, changing by the day, all the different diseases, all the different specialties. It's the reason why they don't spend much time on exercise at all. But as I was saying, exercise really is medicine. The reason why we need to educate doctors as well as patients is so that they're aware that they need to refer to specialists, well, will be better positioned to prescribe exercise. Because as I say, the usual recommendation to tell someone, particularly a frail person, just to go for a walk is not only not effective, but it could be putting them at risk. And I suppose, you know, you don't have to actually be medically trained to become more aware of the fact that resistance training is becoming more popular and recognized to be very effective. So more people are recommending that. But just sending someone to a gym is also not effective. You only have to look back into the research to show how many resistance training programs have been ineffective at growing bone. Maintaining bone, yes, but growing bone, very, very few. So it's all in the prescription.
This is just incredible information. And I just personally want to thank you for your work because, you know, this is so important for all of us as we move into later years of our lives and wanting to get the most out of it. And knowing that if we start to think about it maybe a little earlier than we would have, we can really set ourselves up for success in thinking about new bone growth as we age. You've talked about what the onboarding process looks like. So when people raise their hand and say, I'd like to join the bone clinic, you have a process for bringing people in, measuring their bone density. Are there any people who would not qualify for coming into the bone clinic, or how do you decide whether or not it's going to be the right fit for somebody?
The only people that would not be able to benefit from our program are people who are not able to weight bear. So to perform our program, you need to be able to stand on your own 2 feet. Unfortunately, people who are wheelchair bound, we can't sort of accommodate them because it's a whole different kind of training. But anybody else who can stand on their own 2 feet and can follow directions, so somebody with severe dementia would not fall into that category. You know, if they couldn't follow directions, because it's so important that they are able to take instruction and change their technique if they're not doing it correctly, because we need to protect them from injury. Right. But we have people walking in or coming in on walkers. So, you know, they're using ambulatory aids, and that's another part of my job that I love, is to see these people weeks down the track standing on their own 2 feet, not a walker in sight.
Wow. Yeah.
Because of the nature of the loading, there you can imagine if you think about possibly some of your own relatives or other people that you know, older people who are very frail, they may have had some serious injuries, they may have frozen shoulders and very sore backs and pelvic floor problems, as severe arthritis. There are all kinds of things that make it difficult for them to do our program. So we actually have a pre-Oneiro program, a program where we're trying to get people into a condition where they can do the Oneiro bone loading program. The goal is to get them into this, but there are occasionally some people who will never get into our bone loading program. But we know that by training them in this other way, we'll at the very least prevent falls. And falls are a really important factor for fractures, particularly hip fractures, but also spine, wrist, and so on, not to mention banging the head. So many of our activities are focused on balance and improving balance, but very much on improving lower extremity muscle strength. And the flow-on effects from improving muscle health is phenomenal, metabolically.
That's incredible. Dr. Beck, do you have any experience with people who've had back pain and have come into the clinic and have been able to overcome that through an exercise program protocol that you've prescribed for them?
We have a spectrum. Back pain is so prevalent. There are very few people who come to the clinic who don't have some form of back pain at some stage, myself included.
Yeah.
In general, we find that the exercise helps. It won't necessarily make it disappear completely. For some people, it might aggravate it on some days. So, you know, I'm not trying to suggest that we can cure everything. You know, this is not snake oil. We do the best we can, and people come in and do the best they can. And if they have a day where their back's a little uncomfortable, then they maybe don't train the second time this week, come back the next week and start again. And everything is guided by their own capacity and discomfort. But by far the most common response is an improvement in virtually every musculoskeletal symptom. I'm a classic case of someone who's always had a very bad neck from an old gardening injury.
Goodness.
And I was really worried that this kind of exercise was going to make it worse. And it's quite the opposite. If I stop exercising, my neck gets worse. It, as you say, it's definitely mobility. It's all about trying to obtain a neutral spine to allow our spine to have its own natural protections with its curvatures and the muscular support around it. Again, I can't emphasize enough why it's so important to have supervised exercise intervention in this population for exactly the reason you mentioned, because the way I have always operated is I would do a study, I'd get the results, I'd write them up, I'd publish them, put them out in the scientific literature, then I'd move on to the next project. If I had done that, I feel like I would have done the community a disservice, because the program is not safe in just anybody's hands. It's certainly not safe in somebody's hands who has zero understanding of exercise science and exercise physiology, biomechanics and anatomy. It's the reason why we only employ exercise scientists and exercise physiologists to apply the program, because they understand the biomechanics of the spine and hip and so
right.
on. If I had just published it and moved on to the next project, we would probably have a lot of people getting injured. Instead, we've decided to license the program so that we have an online training facility where physiotherapists and exercise physiologists can train, and they become licensed in the delivery of Oneiro, and then they just go and do it in their own clinic and they have their own patients.
That's fantastic. So they can be a certified, licensed.
Oh, we call the program Oneiro. The study names were Liftmore, but that was the research study. So the program itself is called Oneiro. It needed to have a name so that it could be distributed. And it actually is the Latin word for overload.
So, I love it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So do you have to have qualifications as an exercise physiologist or kinesiologist to be able to sit for the coursework?
Yeah, that's right. So people will contact us and we'll need to see some evidence of their qualifications. Then they will work through the program, which has an educational module. It's about an hour's worth of a lecture from me explaining the principles behind this. And then each of the exercises we break down and we give coaching cues and we talk about the equipment they need in the gym and talk about high-risk patients. It's very comprehensive to prepare them best for delivering the program and also to protect their future clients because it's so important. That's, we're not in the business of hurting people. We want to improve them.
Right. That's so exciting. So Dr. Beck, do you have people throughout the country and throughout the world who are trained? And how could somebody find one of these folks? And
in Australia, it's relatively easy, except for now when everything's shut down, unfortunately.
Right. Other than during a pandemic.
Yeah. Let's say in February of this year, you could have gone either to our website or to Osteoporosis Australia, who is partnering with us to support this program. And there's a map of Australia with little dots on it. It shows you where people are licensed in your area. So about 30 licensees. We've only just sort of begun to distribute the license in this way. So at the moment, as I say, many of those people are shut down, so it's not actually functioning under normal circumstances. Now, the question of global distribution comes up on a weekly basis because, of course, osteoporosis is not an Australian condition. So lots and lots of people around the world are very keen to apply this, and we would love to do that. But to this point, it's been quite difficult to do it because of the complexities associated with assessing people's qualifications. Because, again, we're not in this for making money. We're in this for improving bone. We don't want to put people at risk, so we don't want to train people who are, you know, maybe have a six-week personal trainer certificate. That's not enough training to run our program. You need to understand comorbidities and other things that could be going on with your clients. So it's really important to us to be able to assess those qualifications. And then once we get our heads around that, you know, the US is a classic example of how your regulations are so different in all the different states. So it's extremely complex to go into that market, although we very much would like.
I bet the science is so strong. You've mentioned the, you know, the evidence-based approach to this training method, again, for growing new bone, which is very much a breakthrough in terms of how we think about bone health and approaches to treating people who have challenges with bone density. And that, to me, has been really the highlight of this conversation today, and just sort of the eureka moment that there is a training methodology that can actually help people grow new bone, not just prevent the loss of bone, but to actually grow new bone. And that bone tissue is tissue in your body that needs its own targeted approach to exercise. And that, to me, is bravo, really fantastic work. What an incredible life achievement. And I just want to see it go global because I don't want to have to fly to Australia in 10 years when I'm going to need this. Although that would be pretty fun, but that could be a very expensive route to getting there. But
you'd be surprised people do that. We have had people fly from other countries.
Yes, I bet they do. Well, I have so appreciated this time, Dr. Beck. I do feel as though I've learned so very much today, and I'm sure that our listeners are learning a lot as well.
If they want more information, obviously, just type in the Bone Clinic and it will come up and you can have a read through, and there's all sorts of patient testimonials in there. Interesting to read other people's experiences, and they've allowed us to put some of their bone scans up there so you can actually see the evidence of their improvement. We put what we call Oniro Online, which is a home-based 2-year graduated exercise program. We can't put our hand on our heart and say that this is going to massively increase bone. It's primarily designed to prevent bone loss and also to prevent falls. So it's at least something that people can do to keep them going if they can't make it to somebody who's delivering Oniro. It does require a subscription. I think it's $5 a week or something. And it also will provide some calcium-rich recipes and various things like that. So it is a way that people anywhere in the world could get access to a program that allows them to at least prevent fracture via the pathway of preventing bone loss and preventing falls.
That's fantastic. That's an excellent resource. And we will make that information available on our website as well, the National Spine Health Foundation. Dr. Beck, we have met you through our collaboration with the American College of Sports Medicine. This has been an incredible opportunity for us to collaborate. Can you talk with us a little bit about how you came to join the American College of Sports Medicine and how that works being in Australia?
Yeah, I actually did my grad training in the US. So I did my master's and my PhD at the University of Oregon and then my postdoc at Stanford. So I did so much of my formative training in the US, and my mentors introduced me to the American College of Sports Medicine. I'm so glad that they did, because it is the most fantastic society for bringing like-minded people together who are interested in exercise as medicine in every different aspect of exercise science. So not just clinical, but biomechanics and, you know, basic research in physiology and sports psychology and pedagogy. It's just a fantastic bringing together of minds. Their outreach is great. They have some fantastic publications. It's an honor to be a fellow of the ACSM and a bit of an ambassador for them in Australia. I always introduce my students into the community.
There are so many areas of alignment between, no pun intended, the Spine Health Foundation and sports medicine, because so much of the education that we do at the Spine Health Foundation is to encourage people to exercise. And one of the best ways that you can prevent neck or back issues is to keep moving, just keep moving. And one of the best ways that you can treat back and neck problems is to maintain movement. On the one hand, it seems obvious and intuitive. On the other hand, not so much. As you pointed out, Dr. Beck, in your personal story, that you have some challenges with neck pain. And the best way to keep that pain in check is to just do your regular exercise. In fact, when you don't do the exercise, the pain comes back. And I think we know so much of the time that that is the case for so many people. And I love thinking about the bone clinic as the ultimate use of exercise as medicine and the evidence and science to back that up. This has just been a really fascinating, interesting, and informative conversation. And we are very, very appreciative of your time. I know you're a very busy person. We are so thankful that you've carved out the time to talk with us today.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. My passion, and the more people that I can convince that exercise is the answer for good health, the better.
Dr. Beck's work, primarily related to the effects of mechanical loading on the bone, has involved both animal and human studies, from basic to clinical research. She's been awarded over $3 million in research funding, published over 100 scientific papers, and presented over 170 abstracts at conferences and symposia nationally and internationally. Dr. Beck serves on Osteoporosis Australia's Medical and Scientific Advisory Committee, the ESSA Research Committee, and chaired the American College of Sports Medicine Bone Special Interest Group for 3 years. Dr. Beck's expertise has been recognized nationally and internationally, including invitations to lead or contribute to the development of translational documents such as exercise guidelines for osteoporosis, position statements, and fact sheets for organizations including Exercise and Sports Science Australia, the U.S. National Osteoporosis Foundation, Osteoporosis Australia, and the American College of Sports Medicine. At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you may contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening. The information and views expressed in the Get Back to It podcast are intended for informational purposes and should not be used as a substitute for professional medical advice or to replace the services of trained healthcare providers. To view the National Spine Health Foundation's full disclaimer, visit spinehealth.org.